Honey, are we wearing the same sweatshirt?
Oh my god, are we matching?
Yes.
That's hilarious.
I mean, is it psycho or is it just great planning?
I'm like, why are we out here? because they love the game.
No.
I do not want to hit a little white golf ball around.
Welcome to Henny and Hallie Can't Quit Golf. I'm Henny Koyak.
And I'm Hallie Ledbetter. Hello, Henny.
Hi, Hallie. I'm super excited to say that we have Bubba Watson as our interview guest here on this episode. I really enjoyed knowing more about Bubba and some of his mental health battles and his love of women's golf, certainly over these last 12 months or so. So I can't wait to delve more into his brain because he's such a unique golfer, unique character. And one of the things that we always talk about when we talk about Bubba is Bubba Golf. And that's his fearless brand of playing golf, shaping shots left, right, and center, whether that's like, you know, a 7-iron from 100 yards with a super high chippy little cut that doesn't really make sense to anyone else but him. And I love that he plays golf that way. So we always talk about some of the struggles with golf or times where we've maybe nearly quit golf, but let's flip it and go to times where we've absolutely loved playing golf and felt super free, and to Bubba's element of playing golf, fearless. Talk about a time where you felt fearless on the golf.
Ooh, let's see. Well, I would say I felt fearless and I was playing my best golf when really that was my key. Like I would literally write "no fear" on my arm in Sharpie before I would go to the tee box. And that was my goal for the day. That's how I would judge my success. And I, you know, it was like, how fearless can I play this round of golf? How much fun can I have? Those were the two things that I sort of was, you know, I was going to, okay, I am successful if this is the case. Cause at the time, this was when I was playing college golf. And at the time I was getting really caught up in making the lineup for the team and, you know, having my score count and all these things that were kind of, you know, not directly in my control. And the fact that I could play my best golf and still maybe not make the lineup or not have my score count was just so, I guess, was scary to me, you know, because it's scary to try your best and fail. So I would, you know, I'd almost like sabotage myself in a way. Like I would be so nervous and so scared out there that I never really gave it my best. And then I could kind of use it as a cop out, like, oh, I don't know what, like, I didn't, you know, I was scared. So who knows if I could have actually, you know, how well I could have played. So ultimately I kind of had like a pivotal moment where I told myself, listen, we're going to play fearless golf and we're going to be okay with whatever the outcome is. And we're going to accept it in advance of whatever happens. And that's for me when I first started, like when I started playing my best golf, and that was my, I guess, after my sophomore year of college. And then I won the Southern Amateur that way and got to the semis of the Western Amateur. And I played really, really good golf like that. But it was really fun. It was so much fun to play fearless. But what about you, Henny? What about when did you feel like you were kind of in that zone?
It's so interesting hearing you speak then, because it was just bringing up all these memories for me of even outside of golf, anything in my life that I've achieved has come first from the realization that I had some kind of fear or something holding me back. Because you want it so much, right? So whatever that is, whether that's, you know, a financial thing, a work thing, a relationship thing, you always hear from people, you know, dietary thing. Whenever I just let go and stopped trying, as it were, that's when it just came to me. And I think obviously, as you said, in golf, that is the key, isn't it? Having your goals not be outcome, but process. And I know I sound super cliche there, because we laugh actually, sometimes we interview tour players and in their post round, they go, yeah, you know, I just stick to the process process.
Time.
Everything went well, you know, trending in the right direction. And you're like, oh, boring. I switched off halfway through your second word, like, give me something more, but it's boring, but true. So in response to your question that you asked me about 5 minutes ago, a time that I played Fearless, which I think was almost a bit of a downfall for me, was when I was playing so well, like I was swinging it so good and hitting such great shots that I felt like technically I was in such a great place, I couldn't hit a bad shot. Mm. So that was, that unlocked fearlessness for me. But then I think that almost hurt me, because then when things weren't going so good, I was scrambling on the range to get the technique back to be able to be fearless again. Mm-hmm. So I almost mistakenly believed that the technique being perfect within the inch on the camera down the line and being right in that slot that everyone talks about, that was the key to being fearless for me. And now if I had my time again, I would know that fearlessness is more of a mindset, that it's a choice. I used to call it playing golf with the handbrake on, because it just felt, you just felt stuck all the time. Like you couldn't quite complete your backswing. You couldn't quite use your hips through the ball. And I always lied to myself and said, oh, it's because my right hand's a little over and a little out on the backswing, and I drop it in. So I can't play free golf. I cannot.
I can't. Like, I'm physically not capable.
Available to me right now, swinging it, this horror show of how I'm swinging it, which really wasn't that bad at all. So, yeah, that for me was a very interesting part of my career that I didn't realize until long after. Mm-hmm. I've been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time with the best players in the world. And I maintain this with Tiger when anyone asks me about him. I say one of his most underrated, incredible qualities is the ability to just forget about a bad round and not overanalyze things. Sometimes you come off the court, okay, he gets annoyed, fine, but that lasts a certain period of time, and then he sees his dogs and he's good, or he, you know, deals with it and he's good. And I think that was, you know, we knew that on the golf course that he would get annoyed and then next shot he was good. But then post round, sometimes he'd work on things, sometimes he wouldn't, but the ability to not overanalyze and be like, I need to be swinging it this specific way, or my hands need to be right here at address to be perfect and to play perfect golf, was always very impressive for me. So something I wish I could have learned during my playing career, but now I shall use it to swindle people on golf courses in the future.
I know that I played my best when I played fearless golf, when I tried to play like our friend here, Bubba Watson. So yeah, I'm excited, you know, excited to get to chat with him and learn a little bit more about how he does what he does, and, you know, the struggles that he's overcame, and all about his new book too.
I am so, so happy to welcome onto the pod Bubba Watson today. Bubba, thanks so much for joining us all the way from New York City. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been fun.
Yeah. Let's just get straight in with your relationship with golf. I'm probably just going to leave it there, and that will be the question. What's your relationship with golf?
I think my relationship, I'm taking a lot more from golf than it's taken from me. But, you know, I've been very blessed because of the game of golf. People ask me all the time, what would I be doing if I wasn't a golfer, a professional golfer? I think I'd still be in the golf business. I remember the Special Olympics would come to the golf course when I was 14, 15 years old. And that's when I was able to start helping. And when I say help, all I would do is tee the balls up and make sure they had golf balls and be on the range with them and support them. And so, you know, with their parents there as well. But so I just love it. I just love giving back. I love being a part of something that's more important than me. I lose that sometimes. That's what the book is about. But, you know, that's where I would be. So when you leave it open-ended like that, that can take me in a lot of places. But golf has blessed me beyond belief. And I'm trying to I've tried to give back over the years, even as a young kid, to the game. But obviously, golf is way bigger than I am. So I guess I'm taking more than giving.
Speaking of as a kid, what was young Bubba like? I'm curious.
Oh, man. He was handsome. He was good looking.
Naturally.
I was just an average kid. I would play in Baghdad. Plastic balls around my house one way or the other way for cuts and draws. I remember my doorsteps. We had a screen door, but on the doorsteps, I would throw a tennis ball against it. So if it hit the corner of the steps, it would make a pop fly. I'd catch it with my glove. When it hit in the middle of the steps, it would come back as a grounder. So I used to play baseball games in my yard. And when it skipped off the steps, it would hit the screen door. My dad was like, "You're going to mess up our screen door." And he'd get so mad. But he wanted me to be out there playing sports. And so, and then in the back of my, the back alley, the back part of my yard, there was a little path that go to the post office. So that was instead of where they, so that was the back of my yard, but there was another road back there. And so that's where the basketball goal was. So I'd play basketball. I mean, I would do all of it. And it didn't matter. Me and my, there was a Magic Johnson commercial, I think it was back in the day, talking about raining and you practice in the rain. And I remember playing golf. I remember throwing the ball. I remember basketball in the rain. Me and my mom joked about that all the time, especially when that commercial came out, because I just did it. I was never indoors. I was always outdoors doing something. So my childhood was great. You know, there's always some negatives here and there. I talked a lot in school, but yeah, it was, I would never trade it for the world. I thought it was an awesome childhood.
Bubba, you mentioned as a kid, you were hitting, you know, draws and cuts in the house. I have to preface this question with a little story. So last week I was playing golf with my boss. I think it was a 13th hole. I didn't think it was enough club, but pin, it was like 158. It was a little downwind. I was like, okay, I think I can get it there if I hit a Bubba draw. So aim at the left side of the green. I'm left-handed. So I aspire to play Bubba golf, to play courageous Bubba golf, but aim at the left side of the green, hit a nice little draw in there, hole in one. So
really?
How about that?
You just want to throw that story in there.
Yeah, so I owe that to you. I visualized my Bubba draw, made a hole in one. But your type of golf is really iconic. I mean, my little brother and I, we are both left-handed. So we both, you know, we like to shape shots at, like you, or I mean, at least pretend that we can. And it's such a freeing, fearless way to play golf. And is that something that started, like you said, when you were hitting draws and cuts like that as a kid? Like, you were never really a technical guy, right? You didn't have a coach. You just kind of taught yourself how to do that.
Yeah, I taught myself. My dad taught me the basic grip, the basic swing. He was not very good. He's not here to defend himself either, so I can say whatever I want. But he broke 90 a couple times in his life. So he wasn't that great, but he loved it, just loved being outdoors and playing sports. So I learned it myself. And I think as a kid, you there is no fear, right? Like, what's the fear? I don't have bills. I don't even know what bills are at the time. I don't, you know, back then there wasn't even cell phones. So I didn't even know what a cell phone was, right? So I didn't have to worry about anything. I knew that my parents were going to provide meals for me. So I was good to go. So in junior golf, you just hit whatever you wanted to hit. You hit driver every hole. You hit over water, into the trees, out of the trees. It didn't matter. And so as we get older, that's when the pressure and the fear comes in, thinking about providing for myself and then providing for my wife and then family. And then, I mean, just keeps going, keeps snowballing, right? And life is hard. But as a kid, you develop no fear. And then now when I get to the golf course as an older man, you know, the smart play is to play the center of the green, or don't play towards the trouble. And you hear that, but then somehow your body always takes over and it goes a little bit more to the left or a little bit more to the right, because that's what I've learned. That's what I've taught myself. And so now I guess maybe I can get ready for the Champions Tour and I can start teaching myself to play to the fat of the green. But on the Champions Tour, there's no cut. So now I'm going, I'm going to play Bubba golf again. It's a battle. My whole life is a battle. But as a kid, I learned that. And what I got out of your story, though, is that you like me more than Phil Mickelson, which is great.
Bubba golf, you know, the big draws, big cuts, get the finish. Like, I love it. And that's how, I mean, me and my brother, that's how we're always out there, you know, we're like, come on, play Bubba golf, play fearlessly. But how, or are you able to now play fearlessly, or is it impossible given, like you said, you have the responsibilities of an adult?
You know, it's funny you ask that question, because it's a great segue into my book, but, no, I wish I could play fearlessly. I wish I could go back. Now, there is moments, don't get me wrong. I've won a few times I played great in some tournaments and didn't win. So there is those moments, but I let the pressure build up. I let the pressure build up of world rankings, money list, FedEx points, Ryder Cup, President's Cup points, trying to qualify for the Olympics. That was one of my downfalls where it just kept building in my head. Because as an athlete or as a golfer, as a kid, I never thought about the Olympics. I never even dreamed of the Olympics. So the Olympics is one of those moments that brought me to my darkest hour. And so I wish I could go back to fearless golf. Maybe I should, because I've been very blessed. So bills are being paid. But maybe I should. Maybe I should just free it up. And my caddy, Teddy, for 15 years told me, he goes, man, just hit it, man. Who cares? It's easy to say, hard to do. And as I can tell, now that I've just dug into another part of my life, my fear is, you know, worrying about point systems. And I'm judging my life, me personally, I'm judging my life on a point system when golf is, really means nothing, right? At the whole, if my kids say on my, in my funeral, he was 2-time Masters champion, and that's all they say, then I've already missed the boat. I wasn't the husband I should be. I wasn't the dad I should be. Wasn't the friend I should be. So I've already missed the boat. And so my goal now is to play fearless golf, Bubba golf again, and then let my kids see who I truly am as a person.
Yeah, it's so interesting hearing you say that you don't feel like you're there right now, because I guess Hallie said, and I agree, like from our point of view, when we think of you, we think of Bubba golf, playing fearlessly. Like towards the end of my professional career, I remember there was one tournament, I can't remember where it was, and you must have hit it like 30 yards right with an iron from the fairway, like completely nowhere near the green. But you turned to your caddy and you went, I flushed it though, and then just kept walking. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant, because you just took a positive and you were so unfazed, and you were like, okay, I missed it 30 yards right, but I still flushed it. And I actually started saying that if I had completely missed something but had caught the middle of the face perfectly, I'd just turn and be like, I flushed it though.
Well, it's true, right? You have those moments. We have those moments in a golfing career or just playing with your buddies that you feel like everything, you're in the zone, we'll call it, right? You just, nothing bothers you. You're just living the dream. You know, life is good. And then we have those moments where you just 3-putt and you're like, what am I doing out here? Why am I even here? And so we all have those. And the sad thing is there's cameras everywhere now. So if they only showed me in my high moments, then it looked like, man, Bubba has everything going for him. So yeah, I'm glad you got to see a good moment and you remember me for my good moments. Maybe I should watch that video.
We'll get you a little highlight reel going. But speaking of those moments that you just mentioned where you're like, what am I doing here? Has there ever been a time where you have wanted to quit golf and you're like, I'm just done with this. It's too much.
100%. 2017, my book talks about it. And I fell down to my knees. I weighed 162. And I looked at my wife. I'm leaving a lot of stuff out, but fast forward. I looked at my wife and I told her, I said, I can't do it. I said, why am I playing golf? If golf is going to cause me to, the best way to put it is to die, then why would I want to do that? If golf is bringing this to me, but as I've talked about it, I'm trying to talk about, it's really the childhood, right? There's positive moments in childhood, there's negative. And as those moments build up, then it gets to the tipping point. So it wasn't golf in general. There was moments of golf that caused it, like the negative press and people say this, people say that. So yes, it was golf, but only a small piece of it. We'll say 5%. And then there's 5% from something else, 5% from something else. So it gets me to that 100% where I boil over. So yeah, I mean, there's those moments where I definitely want to quit, but my wife being the leader that she is and the loving wife that she is, she pointed these things out and we sat there and we started talking about it. And I had to be a man and tell her my fears, tell her my issues, especially at my lowest weight of 162. And it could have been lower, but that's the last time I got on the scale. And so I wanted to quit. I wanted to give up the game. I was like, I'd rather be here with you than go through this. If golf is bringing me this, but that's when the red light went off and said, wait, it's not golf. It's a combination of a lot of things that add up. And it looks like it's golf, but it's actually a bunch of other things. Golf is a piece, but there's a bunch of other pieces that made me. So that's why I didn't quit. I would never quit. If I quit today, I'd still play golf, you know, for $20 at Pensacola Country Club, and I would still argue over, you know, who made a birdie and who didn't. So yeah, I would still be in golf, but yeah. Professional golf, you know, getting away from travel so I don't miss my sports from my kids. That'd be really the only way I'd quit golf is because of that, because I want to watch my kids. But
so Bubba, in your book, you opened up about all of this and, you know, your low points and the struggles that you've had with mental health. Why write the book? Why did you feel like it was important to do this?
Well, you know, and I'm just using 2017 as my low point. And so 2017, I went down to my knees and said, Lord, just take me. You know, I don't want my wife to go through this. I don't want my kids to go through this. I don't want my friends to go through this. But then it my aha moment, it made me jump up and be like, well, if this is my last 10 minutes, I got to be great for them. I got to be great for my kids. And if it's 30 minutes, I got to be great for them. I got to be great for my kids. You know, and I just kept building. If it's 2 years, if it's 3 years or 4 years. And so I got to be better. And so then it's so freeing for me to talk to y'all about this. I'm not going to hide anything from y'all. I've struggled with everything. There's a lot of things. I can write another book about really all of my things, right? We touched on some high points or some low points. And so, you know, when I look at this, I wanted to share for my own benefit to help me. But there's people, I'm not going to call y'all two out, but y'all are probably going through some things or been through some things. And hopefully y'all have gotten better and seeked help. But there's people in this room right now. There's people on the street right now. There's people that are dealing with something. I want them to see that I'm a human being and I have issues. It doesn't matter if you think I'm a celebrity or I'm a great golfer. I have issues. Nobody's safe from this. And so I wanted to voice it to help me, but also voice it to encourage other people and let everybody know we're all human. We all want love. We all want respect. And I wanted to try to help people. I wanted to try to bless somebody. And if I could help one person with this book, then the book was well worth it.
Yeah. For those people who don't or haven't heard about the book or don't know about the book, tell us a little bit about it. Just a short description.
Yeah, it's a book about how awesome and how bad my life is. You know, it's Bubba Watson, ups and down, victories and struggles. And it just goes through my life. I mean, the adoption stories are amazing. My wife, marrying her is amazing. And then there's the moments that brought me to my knees. So there's the bad moments, the good moments. I mean, it's all of it. And it's pointing out things. And it's not pointing out things to people to feel sorry for me. It's pointing out things so I can get better, but also help other people to realize, wait, if I talk to somebody and get somebody that I truly believe and trust in, I can voice, and that gets it off my shoulder. Instead of eating you inside, you're letting it out, and it's helping you hear it, but it's also helping you deal with things that are going on. So that's what the book was about. It's about showing that I'm human, and hopefully somebody else resonates with it and they get help or help themselves.
Yeah, for sure. Hallie and I both, you know, we speak very openly about mental health, and we both struggled with depression and anxiety. And as you said, rightly, I think most people do. I know from my point of view, just the conversations we've had this year on air in interviews, you know, it's really, I think it's great for people to connect with you that way. And like, for me to speak to you about that, it's almost, you feel like everyone's in it together, right? It's like, okay, he struggles with that. Hallie struggles with that. Everyone's struggling with this thing rather than feeling really alone and like something's wrong with you.
Yes. And so for me personally, that's what I felt. I felt like nobody else is going through this. Nobody else is doing this. And I'm master's champion. I'm two-time master's champion. I've made X amount of dollars. I've given to charity. I have a beautiful wife. I have two adopted beautiful kids. But there was something else going on. And I felt like nobody could relate to my story, but then I was like, you know what? It helps me to get it out. So yeah, I mean, it's a relatable story because we're all dealing with something. So yeah, you're right. I mean, and side note, I gave somebody a hug a few months ago. And for me, a person talked to me and told me their issues and what they're dealing with. And I know what they're dealing with. But I still just let them voice it, told them my struggles and some things that go on behind the scenes that people don't know about. And then I just said, can I just hug you? That's what I said. I was like, that was my support. I said, can I hug you? And then I hugged him, and that was it. That was our moment, right? That was our moment just to say that I'm here for you. I care for you, and I want to be there for you. So, yeah, we exchanged numbers and I hugged him, and then, I said, I'm here for you if you ever need help. And so that's the sometimes people just want that. They want to have a sounding board, but then they just need a hug. They just need to know that somebody cares about them enough to listen.
Yeah, I'm in the trenches with you and I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes listening, it's like, I don't even need advice. I just need to, you know, go to Henny and vent and sort of, you know, sometimes you've just figured it out by yourself too, just by talking. And if that person just there to listen, I mean, Henny and I, when we were, you know, filming promos for this podcast, that was one of our things. I think it was golf focus at the time, like just letting someone vent and figuring out what was wrong with their game. But it's true in terms of mental health as well. Sometimes you just need a friend to talk to, but they don't even need to say anything. You just need to have them listen.
Right. I guess that's what therapy is for the most part. I mean, I've had therapy for years and you sit there with a therapist probably says like five things throughout the session and you're just like, and then it's those moments of silence and you're like, or even afterwards, a day or two later, and you're like, huh, yeah, okay.
They didn't really you hear it.
Listen. Yeah, you hear yourself.
Right. Right. I have a question for you though. I've never had therapy. I should though, but I've always wondered, do you like want to know who that therapist uses? Because like I'd rather go to, it's like a heart doctor. Who do you use? Because that's who I'd want to use. So that's always been my question. Like every heart doctor I talk to, I was like, who's your heart doctor? Because that's who I'd rather use them. You trust them, then I trust them.
That's a good point. But I like to think of it. So I do know that therapists have someone that they talk to get stuff off of their chest. But I almost think it's like a golf coach who, no offense to golf coaches whatsoever, but 90% of the time, I wouldn't want them to hit my shot for me, even though they're telling me what to do. Does that make sense as an analogy?
It's 100% true. You said 90, right. But I would have said a higher number, but yes.
I was trying to be
I've seen some golf coaches hit balls and I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, but they're telling you what to do. So that's my analogy for therapists.
It is funny though. I would say I had a friend that was her roommate. She was like, my roommate is crazy. She's like, you know, and then I was like, oh, like, and then we're like, oh, what does your roommate do? She's like, oh, she's a psychologist. I was like, what? Aren't they supposed to have their life together? But it just goes back to what Bubba said. You know, no, everybody's dealing with something, even the therapist.
Exactly.
So true. Okay, I have a question about your wonderful wife. So she played basketball in college, right? And how has it been? A, I want to hear your love story because I love a good love story. But B, after the love story, give me a sense of how it's been having her support with her athletic background particularly.
Yeah, so she played at University of Georgia. She played basketball there. She played for the Charlotte Sting in the WNBA. And then she played in Italy 1 year. She played in France 1 year and Italy again. So she played 4 years pro basketball. Too many surgeries. She's had surgeries all over her shoulder. Both knees, I think. She has a knee replacement now. But when I'm going through the moments, now let's switch gears. Enough about her. Let's talk about me again. and so, you know, when I was going through these struggles, and not just there. I mean, there's three moments in my life. I'd say 07, and I'm guessing around 2010 or 2011, and then in 17 when I hit the boiling point. She's been there. She knows what it takes. She knows what it takes to be great at something. She knows the energy. She knows the focus. She knows that sometimes I just need a moment. Sometimes I need a moment just to decompress after a bunch of interviews, tough interviews, or if it's like the Saturday night, right? And the kids are there and the kids are having a blast. And she's like, okay, just go in the room for 30 minutes to just decompress. You know, if I'm leading the Masters or close to leading the Masters, she's like, just go relax for a second. So she understands it because she's done it. She's done it at a high level. So when I think about God's plan and God's timing, I mean, what a beautiful story we have leading up to this. You know, 17 years married, 20 years together. Our first date, depending on if you talk to her or me, the first date, she said, I can't have kids. But before that leads up to that moment, why she would say that is she was already a pro athlete. I was about to turn pro. So it wasn't this puppy love. It wasn't high school. Hey, I love you. You know, this was real. Like, I don't want to waste my time with a person like you, or I don't want to waste my time with you because I've got this job I want to do. I want to be a professional athlete as a basketball player, as a golfer. And if we want to, because we resonated that way, obviously I was attracted to her. I guess she was attracted to me somehow. But so that's why we went on the first date. And then she told me, like, I can't have kids. And I said, perfect. I said, God will provide. God will provide a family for us. There's so many different ways. And so her hearing that, that's probably why she liked me even more, because it, I didn't even blink an eye. It was just, that's what came out. And I wasn't even strong in my faith at that moment. I was just now getting into the Bible, just now learning. And she grew up in the church. So for her, that was a big moment, right? But for me, I was just like, yeah, man, God will provide. Like, it wasn't even, it was just a thing, you know? It wasn't even like, I didn't think it was that serious, but obviously in her head, it was probably a lot more serious. And so, you know, the first time we played basketball together, we're at Stegman Coliseum at University of Georgia. And she has the key. She can get wherever she wants, you know, when it comes to basketball. And so we were in the real Coliseum. It's just me and her. She's tying up her shoes. She's, you know, has a knee brace on because she's rehabbing from her ACL tear. My last year at Georgia, she's already left Georgia to play pro. So it's just me and her. And she says, you want to play around the world? I was like, man, a 6'3 girl, there's no way she's going to make these shots. I was like, yeah, let's play. And she made all 10. And so she goes, you want to play again? And I was like, yeah, but I'm starting. I'm getting a shot in. And so, I mean, just our love of sports, our love of athletics, what she's meant to me in my faith, what she's meant to me in my downs, my ups, all those things. She's been a leader. And now over the last, you know, 5 or so years, give or take, I'm trying to lead spiritually, which the Bible says I'm the leader of the household. But spiritually, I need to also be the leader. And so she led me from the first part up to now. So I'm trying to switch that part, even though I'm still learning from her. So yeah, our story has been amazing. I mean, the adoption story, her being a leader in adoption, talking about adoption. She's on the board of the directors at the hospital, children's hospital that we've been a part of in Pensacola. So yes, she's such a leader in so many avenues. I've been telling her that she needs to write a book about all of her things, from her medical condition when she was born to all the way up to now having to deal with me. So, it's been an amazing story, and in the book talk about it, but for me to be able to talk to her and for our relationship to be successful, I have to voice what's going on underneath, and she needs to do the same thing with me. And so we're still married after 17 years. So I guess we're hanging in there, and our love story is still going.
Watson's relationship goals, honey, right there.
Yeah, truly. I feel like you can tell whenever I see you guys together, you just seem so strong and close, and you just seem like you're, I guess the only way to say, yeah, a very strong couple. The last time I saw you guys together was at the Solheim Cup. Do you feel like her background in women's professional sport gave you a new level of respect that you might not have otherwise had for women's golf?
No, you know, the true answer is no. I mean, I watched Mia Hamm playing soccer. I mean, I could sit here and just talk about, gosh, the volleyball team in the Olympics. I mean, we can sit here and just start naming all these different sports and different icons in women's sports. I can remember when the WNBA started. So I can remember Nancy Lopez. I mean, we can just sit here and I can name women all left and right. But for me, obviously, it's a different light to me, right? Having a wife that played professional sport, having a daughter now that wants to be like dad and be like mom and play sports. And so when I think about that, you know, I want it to be successful. And when I think about women's basketball overseas is by far just as exciting as men's. When I say that, the fans come out in droves. They love it. Russia, women's basketball is through the roof. And so why not in America? And then when I think about golf, again, trying to give back to golf, and the Solheim family has given so much to the game of golf throughout the years. And that's Ping, right? And I've been with Ping since I was 8. John Solheim and his family created the Solheim Cup for women. Half the golfers in the world are women. I'm taking a stab at it. And it's 50% both ways, you know? And so for me, it was just perfect timing. I was going to take some time off. I was coming out with a book. I knew the book was about to come out. So I was going to take golf off. I was going to watch my kids' sports, football for my son. His first time being tackle football. I don't want to miss my son's tackle football because injuries can happen any moment. I want to be there for him. And so it was a beautiful time for me to come up and be a part of this. And then when I think about the captains on the team, I know them all. And so I wanted to be there to support them. And Pat Hurst, I've known her because of the Ping family. And so the Solheim family, and I called her and said, hey, I don't know what I can do, but can I help? Can I support? And And so, yeah, it was just something I wanted to do. And I wanted to bless those girls. And again, my presence being there, I don't know if they appreciated it. I can't really speak for them, but I loved it. And my wife loved every moment of it because she got to be involved in sports and talk to the girls, support the girls. I got to talk to the girls, support them. But yeah, I mean, women's sports is awesome. I love watching the LPGA more than anything because it's so positive. I've been saying that. I'm not digging at anything that the men's telecast does, but kind of. I don't like the negativity. I don't like the negativity. I three putted, right? Like, let's don't say how bad my putting stroke is and I'm a bad person because I three putted. Let's say, hey, man, oh, man, maybe he'll get a birdie next hole. And the LPGA, I think, does that so well. My favorite tournament of all time, which is sadly to say it's going away. I love watching them jump into the water. And I mean, you get a robe for winning. Like, how is that not the greatest thing ever? I'd be wearing that around my house like, every day.
As the man with two green jackets.
Right, exactly. But you know, you're not supposed to get it wet. I think that says it on the inside of the jacket. Don't get it wet. Actually, it says Bubba Watson on the inside of the jacket. But anyway, so this robe, you know. So yeah, I just love it. It's more positive. That's why I love watching the LPGA and supporting these girls, just because I enjoy watching them. Love hearing what they're doing. I love listening to their stories and I love listening to their interviews because their interviews are real, emotional, and it's just fun to watch that and support that.
Well, I know that, I mean, like we said, like you said, Bubba, we'll, you know, we don't know what they were thinking, but I know Henny and I can definitely say that we are so appreciative of you being out there. And it was really awesome to see you there at the Solheim Cup for sure. So, Bubba, I think we got to let you go, but we could sit here and talk to you for hours.
Thank y'all. Thank y'all so much.
And make sure you guys check out Bubba's new book.
Yes.
Thank y'all.
Awesome. Thanks, Bubba.
Yep, thank y'all.
See ya.
Well, that was good, Henny. I enjoyed that.
That was awesome. I love speaking to Bubba. I love that the conversation around mental health has been so open over the last few years, not just in golf and a ton of other sports, but I guess in golf, where especially when you're watching PGA Tour specifically and you see all these guys that just look so zipped up and so focused and you don't know what's going on underneath the hardware. I love that players like Bubba and Matt Wolf and countless others have come forward and said like, hey, actually, I'm dealing with this thing on the side. And it's a huge, important thing to talk about. And we hear the same thing. And we just heard that from Bubba then. It's like, I feel relieved talking about it. Like, I actually like talking about it, which is a big thing for us, obviously, in the media side, because we want to talk to them about it, but we don't know if it's like a big pressure. They don't like talking about it. It's great to hear that it's almost cathartic for them to just get it off their chest.
Yeah, it's helping him just as much as it's as he's helping others, which, like you said, visibility is so, so important. When somebody like Bubba Watson, a two-time Masters champion, says, hey, I'm struggling with my mental health, then, you know, there's a little boy or a little girl, or even, I mean, I don't really consider myself a little girl, but, you know, me.
That somewhere inside you, Hallie, that is a little girl
inside of me. It's like, oh, okay. Hallie. You know, this man who I've looked up to my entire life, who I've idolized as a fellow left-hander that, you know, hits these crazy shots, gave me the inspiration for a hole in one a few weeks ago. He also struggles with his mental health and he is not a perfect human.
Yeah.
So, you know, to see that and, you know, and I think it's not necessary. It's seeing these people that maybe struggle with their mental health and still have success and incredible amounts of it.
Mm.
It's like, wow. Okay. You don't have to be perfect in order
to. Such a good point.
You know, in order to, and it's not like they're having success despite all of it. It's that's just part of that. I mean, you know, having anxiety or dealing with depression or all this stuff. It's like when we spoke to Daniel Kang, it doesn't mean that you're broken or anything's wrong with you. It's just, it's a
part of being human, isn't
it? Yeah,
it just totally is what it is. I think that's such a good point you made, that you can still be successful and have stuff going on that you're battling.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, if you're a young person listening to this, it doesn't mean that, oh, I can't achieve all of my hopes and dreams because I struggle with this.
Right.
You know, insert thing there.
Mm-hmm.
I also absolutely love his passion for women's sport.
Yeah. It goes
beyond golf. I would never have expected him to quote anything about basketball in Russia, women's basketball in Russia. I mean,
no, Mia Hamm, he's all about it.
Yeah, I love that. That's so unique. I wish that was commonplace.
Me too. I wish there were you know, big male sports stars that were just, you know, shouting about women's sports from the rooftops like Bubba. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I have multiple conversations with my husband, Ben, about this. And I think one of my big things is I don't want to compare women's sport to men's sport. Mm-hmm. That, I think, annoys me the most. And you can never get it across on Twitter when people are all going, but what about this? Yeah. What about the viewership? Like, it's more about creating opportunities for women and supporting that for me. Like, I obviously have a daughter. I want to support whatever she wants to do. If she wants to play basketball, rugby, tennis, or none of the above, fine. But I think it's about having the opportunity to do what you want to do. So as a young girl, if you want to play rugby, I want there to be an opportunity for you to do that. What does that mean? I have to support women's rugby. And I don't need to compare that to men's rugby. It's not going to be as fast. It's not going to be as physical. It's not going to be as powerful. Women's golf, they're not as powerful. You can't spin it as much. So the short game isn't as good, if you want to say good. I don't want to make these comparisons anymore. Mm-hmm. I feel that really irritates me. It doesn't need to be compared. It just needs to be supported so that there are opportunities for, if you have a daughter one day, she can play this sport too. Mm-hmm. Without it needing to be better than in order to quantify the support, right? That's what really annoys me. It's like women's golf has to be equal to or better than men's golf or sport in order to deserve television rights. Like, can we just get away from that comparison and just say, we want to support women's golf in and of itself for all that it is and isn't in order to provide and create opportunity for these young women who are the best at what they do in their own sphere without that needing to constantly live up to a different sphere of men's golf.
Exactly. As you said very passionately with your LPGA tour hoodie on. Yes. We should note that I did show up earlier with the same exact LPGA tour hoodie on and I had to change. But
that was very gracious of you, Hallie, to change.
It's okay. My closet's about 20 feet away. So it's okay. No, but I completely agree with you, honey. And I, you know, so grateful that we have, I guess, allies like Bubba Watson that are passionate about it as well. And it's really great to see.
I agree. I got on my soapbox a bit there, but it's nice, honestly, to have a platform to speak in more than however many characters Twitter allows you to speak in. And just to explain a concept, and for players like Bubba to go to the Solheim Cup, it just creates more visibility, and hopefully more men will see that and go, oh, actually, if my hero or the player that I love, Bubba, also loves women's golf, maybe I should give it some respect too. Mm-hmm. So it's always incredibly valuable to be an ally to women's sport. And actually, that inspired me to learn more about other women's sports, because I don't know a whole lot about women's basketball. So that's my
mission. Maybe we got to get a WNBA player on here then.
Huh? Yes, we do. We do. I feel like I see so many incredible stats and facts about WNBA players on Instagram, and I couldn't name one, or I haven't watched it. So that's going to be my take home homework from this episode's pod.
I like it. It sounds good. I'll do the same. All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Henny and Hallie Can't Quit Golf. And we will see you next time.